Hey everybody, what's going on? It is Podcast Champs here on the 2nd of January with Damien and Dio. Find Dio on Twitter. I'm just DEO. Your boy Damien G at DamienG347. So AEW, Dio, I hear that's a big deal.
Yeah, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Like, there are new wrinkles to it that other promotions haven't had before, namely a large cash backing, and then like you have a family that are literally billionaires that can, you know, that are behind this promotion. So
the Khan family,
right? Which we'll go into that another time. Yes. But like you have this backing by a large company. Now that could be, or like a large investor, which can go one of two ways, because if you're not making money on investment, they will cut you very quickly. That is the one thing that, you know, while it is great that they're gonna have this backing, at the same time it's like, bruh, like y'all literally can't mess this up, because if, you know, they don't start showing return on investment pretty quick, his dad will definitely be like, yeah, no, that's that. You got to get up out of that. So,
well, it's business 101. You're in it to make profit. And if you happen to believe in the thing you're selling, i.e. the owner of AEW, as well as, you know, the brain trust, we'll call it, that's right, going to be put in charge of it. That's 101 of business. Make a profit. Sounds simple enough, but in a fickle realm of sports or sports entertainment or wrestling, it's really hard to make a dent, especially when you are, and maybe this is what a lot of people are kind of misconstruing about AEW, is that people are assuming that it's going to immediately rival WWE because of who's involved in the, I guess, the brainchild part of it all.
Right.
And I think that is gravely risky for people to say, like, as if WWE has competition now.
Yeah, it's foolish. It's foolish.
We've tried this already.
Right.
You know, Impact, TNA, WCW. Let's be honest here. WCW was the last viable competitor to a major wrestling promotion. I mean, I know we have MLW kind of swimming the waters at this point.
Yeah, but they're not they're still. So this is the thing that people don't understand, and this is the biggest X factor, and is that Vince McMahon has essentially shaped what pro wrestling is. He has shaped not only the style of wrestling that people do now, he has shaped how the audience views what pro wrestling is.
Yes. Right?
Like, they have a cooked in, just a baked in audience. Like, they, at this point, they are a juggernaut. There is literally nothing. And when I say nothing, there is nothing that anybody could do in the company that would deter a large portion of that fan base. Because a lot of times we get lost in thinking that the quote unquote hardcore audience are the only people that watch. And that's not the case. It's kind of like, this is something that happened in MMA with the UFC. People, like the hardcore fan base, thought, oh, we are the ones that matter and this is that. And he's like, but except the people that are actually going out and spending money on this, going to live shows and that we're paying for the pay-per-views, are casuals.
Right.
Like, they keep, you know, you guys might make up maybe 20 to 30% of the profit, but the casuals are the ones that give them all of the money. That's where they make all of the vast majority of their money. So, like, just because we are upset with the, you know, with the product at a point in time, that means nothing, you know, because the populace at large, they don't care. They're cool with it. Like, they're just, oh yeah, I'm just tuning in just to see some pro wrestling. That's it.
Right. And I've often made this connection often where WWE or wrestling in general, I look at it as medieval times. You know, if you're a casual person and you're going to catch a show, quote unquote, You're going to buy popcorn, food, like going to a baseball game. Right. You may not really know who's playing the vast majority if you're not a hardcore quote-unquote fan. You're going to go because it's a night out. Maybe right. your son or daughter saw Sasha Banks or saw Bayley or Brock Lesnar or whomever and thought, that looks cool. Let me nag my mom and dad to take me. And then that's which who you're really doing it for. Because even though we're progressing as wrestling fans and wrestling's progressing as a more, I guess, mainstream medium for television and, right. And other things, it's still niche.
Right, yeah, it's still niche. Like, even though it's moving to Fox and all that stuff, it's still niche. Like, right. It's still, yes, you know, a lot of people watch pro wrestling and it's still not super, super mainstream, right?
Right.
So when you ask, because like if you ask people, you know, who your favorite pro wrestlers are, it's going to be the same handful of people. It's going to be Hulk Hogan, mm-hmm. The Rock, Stone Cold, The Undertaker, and maybe John, and probably John Cena. Right, like you're gonna get those kinds of people. That's all they care about. And, you know, they might not have watched in years, or they might only watch like once every few years, even. But it's like it's a niche. It's still a niche. Yes, it might get quoted in rap songs and stuff like that all the time, but it's still not like it is. It's not super mainstream. It is an institution, but it's not main. It's not super super mainstream.
So. I, since you moderate for MMA and you have vast experience working within that framework, mm-hmm. I'm curious to know your feedback, not on the promotion of who's running it, but on the business model of AEW, mm-hmm. because I'm fascinated by the way to run a wrestling promotion from top to bottom.
Right.
So from what you deal in with MMA, can you make any parallels as far as the way a business practice can be run, let's say UFC or when it was Strikeforce, what AEW can do to kind of put their stamp on things going forward and not just be a TNA or a Impact?
Right. Well, one, they have to have, above anything else, they have to have legitimate talent. Mm-hmm. Because without that, then you're not going to go anywhere, right? That's why one of the reasons why like Strikeforce did so well for so long was that they had legitimate talent. They picked up the talent that the UFC either didn't want to deal with or didn't have the enough money to deal with at the time, or had just had a bad business relationship. But yeah, so first and foremost, you have to make sure that you have the talent. The other thing is you have to give them something new. Like mm-hmm. you can't just give them WC or WWE adjacent stuff. You actually, you're going to have to give them something like it's very different, right? Like Bellator right now is another MMA promotion that when they first came up, they did this something that was revolutionary at the time. And it was that instead of it being just a promotion where people fight against each other, kind of aimlessly, and then we'll make a ranking and then we'll pick people who's going to fight for titles. Every season was a tournament for a weight class. So one season was lightweights, which is 155 pounds. The next season was welterweights, 170 pounds. And like they set it up that way. Yes, they still had fights in other weight classes on those shows as well. But just a simple fact that this was like the UFC didn't do tournaments like this. Like you would have at the end of the season, somebody would fight the champion, you know, whomever made it through the tournament would then fight the champion at a later date. That was something that we hadn't seen before. Like we hadn't seen tournaments like that in like almost a decade, basically. So that was something that was refreshing. So you have to give something that is new and it has to be high level, right? You can't just, they cannot come out the gate with some bullshit, essentially.
Okay, prime example. I've seen on social media, especially throughout the Twitterverse, because you know that's our favorite source of news there, Dio, where everybody is piping for once Ryder or Ty or insert your fave who's not being pushed here,
right,
gets released. So instead of touring the indies, they would probably have like an open door policy just to walk on into AEW, which I find to be very reckless if that's the case.
Right.
But look at what TNA tried to do years ago in terms of just implementing talent that right. they got from WWE or WWF. Right. They brought in Raven. They brought in Rob Van Dam. They brought in Kurt Angle. They brought in Booker T. Basically, Christian, I think, was the only one that came from WWE or F that in TNA actually was kind of elevated past what they were.
Right. Because
Angle's Angle, that's fine. Right. But as far as being a mid-carder in WWE, becoming a main event player in Impact Wrestling or TNA Wrestling.
Right.
I feel like that for people that say, oh, once you put Ryder, Zack Ryder, or even Curt Hawkins in AEW, they'll do great. How do you know that?
Right, you don't. This is we only know them in a certain capacity. We only know them in one environment.
Right.
Right? Like what Zack Ryder did in his ascent to being a main event talent.
Mm-hmm.
He couldn't have done that within a TNA. He couldn't have done that on the indies. It just wouldn't be possible, right? Like it literally would not be possible for that to happen. And one of the other things too is, so a lot of times, like when people are taken off of TV and whatnot, is a lot of time there's reasons that we don't know about, right? Like, and then oftentimes we come to find out the person's been dealing with an injury or has become prone to injuries over the years. Like, how many times has Zack Ryder been injured in the past couple years? Every single time he starts to make a comeback, what happens? Injury.
Yeah.
And it's like, at a certain point, it's like, all right, we really can't trust this person to be in the ring mm-hmm. anymore because, you know, Zack Ryder looked like when he got injured last, it looked like it was a normal bump for the most part. Like had it been another person, it'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, they'll be all right. But anytime he gets, it's like, yo, the sky is falling. You know, he's done, you know? Mm-hmm. So just because you've seen them in one capacity, that doesn't mean they're going to do well elsewhere.
And I have a person that I'm thinking of right now that we've talked about. Jack Swagger comes to mind where he was on the WWE machine for a while, toured the indies for a little bit, mm-hmm. realized not really many people are going out there to see Jack Swagger,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you don't really see him getting booked, at least not recently.
Right. Plus he's asking WWE money is the other thing too. Like a lot. Yeah. And that's one of the things that a lot of people don't realize. People that are in the WWE, they are used to making to a certain lifestyle. They are used to getting paid a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. So they're going to, you know, and in the WWE, you work multiple times a week, right? If you go to an indie somewhere, you're not going to be able to work. One, you're not going to be working as much, right? And being that you're not going to be working as much, you're going to have to charge more per appearance than, you know, say your indie darling is, right? Like an indie darling might charge, I don't know how much people get paid. So say, I'll just throw out a hypothetical, hey, all right, I'm going to get paid. Your indie darling gets paid $2,000 per appearance, right?
Okay.
And somebody in the WWE is going to come in and ask for 10 because they can. They've got the name value associated to it. And a lot of people aren't going to, you know, they're not going to want to do that because if they go and shell out $10,000 for Jack Swagger and Jack Swagger is not going to bring in $10,000 worth of an audience, now you've kind of screwed over the other people that could have been booked as well. So it's like a lot of people, it's not just going to be the fans, but it's also the owners of the promotion that are going to look at this from a cost perspective. I'm like, is it worth it? It's not really worth it, you know?
Well, that goes back to also what we said earlier about constructing the business model for this.
Right.
If you're, and again, we know that the cons have a buttload of cash.
Right. They're not just going to throw it away though. That's
exactly. But for the top tier, i.e. Cody, Bucks, Paige, whomever in the elite is brought in, they're obviously going to make the top dollar.
Right. And they are also friends with the son. So off rip, they are going to get special. They're going to be afforded special privileges that others wrestlers are not.
Which also begs another question. When that inevitable first jump from, let's say, Impact or even WWE happens, right, is it going to be someone that moves the needle?
Right.
Probably not. It's not as if we have Sting going from WCW to WWE in his prime, or I mean TNA in his prime.
Right.
You know, we're probably going to get a Zack Ryder, a Dolph Ziggler type, who probably is about 37, 38 years old.
Right.
Wanting to get off the grind of the road, because we don't even know what AEW is going to structure itself as. Are they going to structure themselves?
Or, you know,
right. Like, is it going to be weekly? Is it going to be a monthly pay-per-view? Are we going to have All In, and pardon the dog barking in the background? Are they going to have like All In specials?
Right.
We don't know what the construct is. All we have is a banner, and they sign their contracts.
Right.
That's
and the
about
other
it.
Thing. The other thing too is, so people came into All In because All In was essentially like a one-off, right? All yes. In was like, people were like, oh my God, we're going to change the industry. We have to show that there's a, is that sustainable? Probably not. Like it probably is not going to be sustainable to have these crazy large showings every single time that they go out. Like that just is what it is. It doesn't matter who you are. The WWE doesn't sell out all the time. The UFC doesn't sell out all the time. No promotion sells out all the time. Doesn't matter what sport or entertainment form that you're in. Medieval Times doesn't sell out all the time, right? Like, it does not matter. Like, it's it just how people think that it's going to be All In every single time is just not realistic. And the other thing, too, is, like, people – and I've talked about this so many times before, mm-hmm. where people love to say that the Young Bucks and Cody and, just the Bullet Club, or rather I should say the Elite, not the Bullet Club, the Elite, they're fighting against the man. And I've harped about this so many times.
I know.
Oh, they're fighting against, no, they're using the exact same tactics, right? So they're not anybody that goes to AEW, I'm sorry that I'm going to have to bust a lot of your bubbles, but these people are going to get signed to contracts, and those contracts are going to be restrictive too. Because right. if you want to have, cause, and that's the thing that people don't think about. So with the whole NXT UK thing that recently happened, it made a big stink about, right? Oh my gosh, they're keeping them from working another company. That's because they have to. They have to make sure that they have talent on a certain time. Like, what happens if they leave the contracts open and this person goes and books 6 months in advance that they're going to be in Mexico in AAA or, you know, whatever promotion they're going to be in? What's going to happen then? You know, when they can't, when talent that they have signed can't show up to shows that they have, you know, like that's not a, it's just not realistic.
Card subject to change, Dio.
Card is subject to change. Like you have to sign people to restrictive. Otherwise you're not going to have a reliable promotion. Right. That's why Lucha Underground had such restrictive contracts, because they knew from within, like, that they only run for, you know, they only record a certain amount for a certain amount of time, and then it's split up over, you know, a long period. Mm-hmm. They still needed to have that talent come back, you know? So, like, that's just one of those things that people a lot of times they forget. It's like, yeah, it's not just a handful of promotions around the United States. You know, it's not just a ROH, it's not just a TNA or Impact or MLW. There are dozens of promotions. In Atlanta alone, there's like five promotions. Like there's three big ones. And then in the state of Georgia, there's even more. Like to think that they're not going to have the same type of restrictive contracts, you're fooling yourself. And I do not care what they say. They're going to tell their fan base, or I should say their cult, that they are we're going to be this and we're going to be different. No, you're not. Because if you don't adhere to some of the same exact policies, you're going to fail, just because you're not going to be able to have a consistent show. They just won't.
Well, no, exactly. And that goes back to what we're saying about the contract structure, or just structuring the talent payouts, because you can't run it like Impact, where you record twice a month.
Right.
If that, or once a month, and then it allows you to keep 50% of your indie dates, depending on your star status, you know, This is going to be similar to the Monday Night War era, where people are locked into contracts. Like you said, there will be people who get 2-year contracts or 1-year contracts, and you will not see them in your local indie fed. You're not going to see Pentagon or Rey Fénix at insert New Mexico wrestling event here. Right. You know what I mean? People like that are eventually going to get signed away, and you're not going to see them in your small market unless AEW comes visiting in the town, WWE, Ring of Honor, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So for people to think that this is automatically going to overtake WWE, and I'm not saying that's the vast majority of people. I'm saying, like you, these zealots who are out there who are drinking the Kool-Aid of everything the Bucks and the Elite do, no, they're businessmen just like WWE is, just like the people who run Sinclair Media, TNA, or Impact, or whatever.
Yeah.
That's not smart business practice to let your talent go wrestle elsewhere where they could get hurt on an indie show, thinking, well, they got hurt working for MLW. Guess we can't bring them back in. They're going to be on the shelf for about 6 months.
Right.
That's not smart. I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't let my talent do that.
Hell no.
So I think also, and we're going to save this for another episode of Podcast Champs, where we both have kind of the roundtable thing going on with myself, you, Kat, and Darnell. Just, you touched on something. You called it a cult. The cult of personality, we called it in the DM on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to slowly gauge this, because I want to dive in a little deeper with everybody else. At what point did the Bullet Club / the Elite, and maybe that's exactly when it happened, where everybody was this just blind follower of they could do no wrong? And it's very akin to the NWO. It's very akin to ECW, or even the WWE stalwarts who, you know, Vince and co can't do any wrong. So for you, when did the wheels fall off Bullet Club / the Elite in terms of the fandom, where it got a little too cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs for your liking?
For me, was probably right around when when Prince Devitt came over to the WWE. That was right around when, that's when I started to see, okay, it's not like, because then it was like, okay, who are they? Who are these people actually like really rooting for? You know, what are they rooting for? Do they actually know, or are they just happy with like this logo that they see? You know, like, because like, no two ways about it, Bullet Club had the dopest shirts in pro wrestling when they came out.
Heck yeah, they did.
Period. Like, it was a great design, because it didn't look like a pro wrestling shirt. It looked like a dope like indie rock band shirt or something like that. Like, it looked awesome. And like, it was right around then when like I started to see, and like, you know, everybody wants, once I started to see everybody wanting to too sweet each other, that was when I was like, all right, this has become more of a meme than anything else. You know, like, these people, I don't think that these people actually really, 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 really care about what's being done here.
And it's just being down with the crew, kind of.
It's just down with the crew. Like, they love, you know, and like, when you have somebody like Cody Rhodes, who is a fucking genius. Like, I will say whatever you want about him in the ring and his run into WWE. He is a genius when it comes to promoting himself and those around him. He gets it. He understands, not only does he understand human nature, he understands how the pro wrestling populace tends to think about stuff. And he got it right off the bat. He already knew what he needed to do. He took aspects of like Donald Trump. He took aspects of Kanye West and all of these other larger than life personalities, these eccentrics, if you will. And he took different aspects of them and incorporated that into who we know now as Cody. Right. And like a lot of it is akin to the, to like the Trump campaign. Like no matter what they do, the people that are hardcore about it are going to follow Cody into, if he says jump off a cliff, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a good amount of people that jump off cliffs.
Well, here's the thing also I remember, because you're right, this is a Cody Rhodes spearheaded aspect or thing, because right. I remember distinctly when he debuted the vignettes for New Japan.
Yeah.
You know, putting out the cigar, you know, the American Nightmare. I'm thinking, and who was his first opponent? Juice Robinson, I believe, was his first opponent in New Japan.
I think so.
And that was maybe the fourth match on the card.
Right.
And to see him be put in that, pardon the pun, elite category with the Bucks, who I think are superb marketers,
just
superb at marketing. Yep. Basically, because I didn't think about this until they wore it at their last Ring of Honor event. They essentially are the rockers.
Yeah.
For the current age.
Absolutely.
You know how like in fashion and trends, they come around very circularly?
Yeah.
Bell bottoms were out, then they came back. You know, old school stuff comes out, goes out, comes back. The Bucks are the new rockers, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of now they just know how to market themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, no, like they are – there's always a specific archetype. There are like – 10 different archetypes in pro wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. The rockers, you always have a group that is similar in look and vibe. So you have the rockers, and then you have the Rock and Roll Express. You had these very, then you had the Hardy Boys. Then from the Hardy Boys, then you have the Bucks. Like you always have these people that fill this void when one of them is gone. And they just happen to, like, they realize that, right? They understood that. And I will never say anything about them as far as them not understanding their psychology or their marketing prowess. I will never say that. They are amazing when it comes to that. I'm not a fan of them in the ring more often than not. But, you know, that's just a personal opinion. But when it comes to marketing and stuff like that, like they get it. And they have aspects of every single one of those groups. Right. Every single one of those groups, the look that they had is the rockers. They have a lot of the Hardy Boys high-flying moveset, right?
And the charisma of the Rock and Roll Express.
Exactly. And the super kicks.
Yes.
So, like, they understand, and all of they are essentially a cover band. And I've said this about I have said this about them for the longest time. They are a cover band that is doing the greatest hits of those that came before them, right? Yes, they have new moves and stuff like that and all that, but they are fruit of those. From that tree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
I just want the audience to know here on Podcast Champs with Dio and Damien that we're not bashing the marketing. And we're not going to bash the marketing and the fact that they were able to make this thing happen.
Right.
You know, because so many people are saying, yeah, but like you said, bet on yourself, screw the man. Well, they have bosses now too.
Right.
The Khan family is their boss.
Right.
For all intensive purposes. So they're going to answer to somebody.
Yep.
Not as if they're making it with their own money, AEW, and then deciding, yeah, you know, we're going to pay ourselves a pittance because we can get this money from other promotions.
Right.
Nope. They got bosses now, too. So I want to see, especially with the creative aspect going forward, what the Khan family is going to want as far as programming, or are they going to be very laissez-faire, hands-off-ish, right, and say, all right, well, I'm just the money guy or gal. You do what you need to do, and I'll stop in once a month just check on the numbers.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like I said, they're going to want a return on their investment. And if they are not getting a return on their investment, you know, like then they absolutely will pull the money from there. And like, what's going to happen? Because before, people have talked about like, oh, the WWE is trying to keep people down. You haven't seen the WWE try to keep other promotions down yet. You haven't seen it. You when you are inside of a bubble and you haven't seen how a promotion can literally kill off every other promoter, then you can't, you haven't seen that yet. Like, I got to see it with the UFC. Like, Dana White, literally, there's a picture of him. He has a tombstone in his hand. Oh, he's no. grinning with a tombstone in his hand with all of the other promotions that he killed off.
Yikes.
You
how many did he kill off?
He killed, it was at least five or six that they get, that major promotions that were around that he killed off. Because he just buried everything possible, handed out contracts left and right, and would, like, you know, double book events. So he, if he found out that this, you know, card was going to be here, he would book an event. And who are you going to go to, the UFC or, you know, Fight Club Pro? You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just not gonna, it's like, you guys haven't seen, if you think that you've seen the WWE get dirty, a cease and desist ain't shit compared to what they can do. Cause what you guys don't realize, I work in the legal industry. So this is why I'm saying this. They are one of the most litigious companies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And litigious means that they are prone to lawsuits, suing people, okay. right? They have fuck you money, essentially, right? They can do whatever, like, they can, they have enough money that they can tie people up in courts indefinitely. And it would
just because.
And it's no sweat off their back. One, because they have in-house counsel. Because they've paid to have this amazing in-house counsel. That's why so many of those lawsuits go away.
Yeah.
Because they can, people either are going to run out of money for the lawsuit, or they're just going to lose because the counsel that they have is really good at what they do. So if, you know, the AEW starts to mess around, that's when it can get very, very ugly from a legal aspect, but also from a promoting aspect.
Right.
Like, and
especially
now that the WWE has as much money as it is now, they can poach whoever they want. They can, like, if they really wanted to, if Vince McMahon really wanted to, he could kill AEW where it stands. He could throw an insane amount of money at the people, at the talent behind it. They're not gonna, they at their heart, yes, they are business people and they want to change the industry, but sorry, money talks.
Right. And even Vince's money can make you talk a lot faster.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
And I want to touch on something about promotion, something that came up for me this weekend, actually, switching gears a little bit here. Amanda Nunes,
yes.
and UFC.
Yep.
Everybody for years talked about Chris Cyborg versus Ronda Rousey. Remember
yep.
that?
Yep.
Remember how that was supposed to be the fight that solidified women's MMA?
Yep.
Or even what was a big deal for women's sports in general.
Right.
And not even combat sports. And just seeing how Amanda Nunes, and I believe Darren Ravel caught flack for this on social media, Business Insider featured prominently at ESPN and MSNBC, I believe,
right.
Basically saying Amanda Nunes has single-handedly killed the women's division UFC by herself.
No, the UFC did that.
That's- yeah, the UFC did that by not marketing Amanda Nunes as what you knew and you were telling me about her a while ago.
Yeah.
Even before the fight with Rousey.
Like, she is so... She has the potential to be a breakout star if the UFC actually wanted to promote her. Like, the UFC, so when she had her fight against Ronda Rousey, when Ronda Rousey was supposed to make her spectacular comeback
mm-hmm.
and come back and get her belt, one, we knew We saw her against someone that is a skilled striker, and she did terribly, right? And we already knew that Amanda Nunes has bricks for hands. It's ridiculous. Like a lot of times people will say, oh yeah, you know, I always train with men. No, she trains with men because she hits them harder than most men. That's why, right? So in the lead up to the fight, when I say there was no promotion of Amanda Nunes, who was the champion at the time, she was the champion. So Ronda Rousey got put on, you know, Good Morning America and this is that and the other. And even the video packages for everything, you had Ronda Rousey for 95% of the footage and the interview, and then you just have like a tiny little part with Amanda Nunes. They don't put her on TV. They don't put her on talk shows, mm-hmm. anything. She is a very personable person. She has an amazing personality. When she smiles, she lights up the screen.
It radiates, yes.
It radiates. The UFC has what people tend to say about the WWE. They have a type that they want to promote.
Mm-hmm.
And with Ronda Rousey, she's your, you know, classically attractive blonde white woman, right? Yes. And not just a white woman, but she's straight, right? So she is every guy's dream, essentially.
Girl next door.
Girl next door, right? Amanda Nunes is a lesbian Brazilian woman that no man has a chance with, right? She dresses like a tomboy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's in their mind, she's not marketable. But if she were like people of one, women of color will flock towards her. Then you have the LGBTQ community that will flock to her. Like, they don't want to branch out to that because you still have this, it's still this machismo that runs the mindset of it. So they have not promoted her at all. The only time that they ever promote her was when she had a fight, but they only promoted her to the MMA fan base that already knew about her.
Right. The rabid fan base, not the rabid fan base that we talk about when it comes to.
So legit, when I say Halle Berry tweeted about the fight, because she was at the fights,
mm-hmm.
Amanda Nunes got more promotion and exposure from that one tweet that Halle Berry did than the UFC has ever given her.
That's sad.
That's not hyperbole. This is fact. So when Darren decided to open his dry mouth to say that, it was factually incorrect. If you don't promote someone, people aren't going to know about them, especially when you have such a story that so many people would connect to, right? Like it was just like he was loud and wrong. And that's the only reason why I was like, I'm mad about it. 'Cause he was loud and wrong.
You could be loud, but at least be right.
Wrong. You're right. You can't be loud and wrong. Man, like you can only be one. You can only be wrong. One of them. Right. But like it was such a, and this is what happens when you have when you don't have a diverse group of people, not only running the business, but also reporting on the business, stuff like this happens.
Right. And I think we're going to save a good chunk of this for our next episode of Podcast Champs with the Roundtable, because you mentioned it earlier about reaching out to different fan bases, you right. know, women, people of color, the LGBT community.
Yeah.
There are other markets aside from, and I love this, and I give this credit to Melissa, because we were talking about the marketing of WWE and wrestling in general, how it's for the 15 to 42 year old white guys.
Yeah, that's all it is.
That's what it is. And if you can't tap into that market, you're already playing behind the eight ball, as it were.
Right.
But there are so many different markets you could tap into. If you're about maximizing fan I guess, investment.
Right.
Then you got to find a way to incorporate everybody. It can't just be, okay, well, Ronda looks good in a poster. Let's put her on a poster.
Right.
You know, but Amanda Nunes got, you know, hands of stone. So if you're coming to UFC to see somebody get knocked the F out, scream out world star, then Amanda Nunes should be the person you're backing here, because I've seen her in four fights. I saw the Cyborg fight. Cyborg got her butt kicked early, easy. All it took was one overhand shot. Boom, done. Yeah. And then she was wobbly. And for years, all we heard was Chris Cyborg and Ronda Rousey is the greatest women's MMA potential match we could have. And look what happened. Nunes destroyed them both.
Right.
In less than two rounds.
Right.
My goodness. UFC, anyone in terms of just sports, if you have an athlete that's dominant, Serena Williams in tennis.
Right.
You and I, we've talked about Serena being probably the most dominating athletes of this century.
Right.
Not female athletes, athlete in general. You know, I put her up there with the LeBrons of the world, MJs of all, you know, the GOATs, as we like to throw that term around. But UFC, man, for you to just make this a Cyborg fight, oh, yeah, by the way, Nunes is here too.
Right.
You're wrong, man. Dana, you're wrong. And which is funny because he's got that Vince McMahon style of promotion and trying to actually get people to buy, put butts in the seats, as it were.
Right.
But I just found that funny how we're talking about promotion and the baddest MMA fighter, you know, on the women's division, some would say pound for pound in the world.
Oh, she is the greatest of all time. There, at this point, there is irrefutable proof. There is empirical evidence. She is the greatest of all time. She killed off two of the GOATs.
Supposed GOATs.
No. She killed off two of the... Ronda Rousey is one of the greatest women's martial artists of all time.
Okay.
I will never take that away from her. She just ran into people that were far superior to her. That's what that's all that is. It happens. But like there's no way to say it, but like she has killed off she killed off Cyborg, who had a 13 year, right? Ronda Rousey only had a couple years. Cyborg had a 13 year career, where she ran through every bit of her competition, every bit of the competition that she faced. And Amanda Nunes just snuffed them both out combined. She snuffed them both out under 100 seconds.
Oh my God.
It is irrefutable at this point. Strength of competition wise, when you look at their full careers, all that, she is the greatest. It's not, nobody can, like, people will try to pull some of the women that fought in Japan that went like 30-0. And it's like, who they fought against each other, it doesn't even compare.
Right.
You know, like it just does not compare. But so when we talk about like reaching out to different audiences and stuff, right? So to put into perspective, when it comes to the UFC, right? There was a big fight between two fighters, and it was John Jones and Rashad Evans.
Oh, okay.
And when they did that, that was the first time that I remember seeing them actually reach out to the African-American audience. That was literally the first time I had ever seen it. That was the first time that I ever saw them actually put like billboards up in black communities. That was the first time that they showed up on Power 105, which is, for you guys that don't know, the Breakfast Club on Power 105 1 in New York is the biggest syndicated morning TV like show in the world. It just is. That was the first time that we ever saw them reach out to the African-American audience, right? When they had the first time that they reached out to the Latino American audience was with Cain Velasquez. And the thing about like, and even with Kane, Kane's not like a native Spanish speaker. So you can tell, like, you have the – so you have people in the Latino American world where you have folks that you can hear that they spoke it as their first language.
And in the inflection.
And then, yeah, in the inflection, in the accent, like, you can just hear it. And that was the first time that they ever reached out to the Latino market, because they find they had a Latino champion or Hispanic, whichever you prefer to go with, Latinx, well, whichever way you want to say, right? Mm-hmm. They had a problem with that, right? And when you look at the WWE, there hasn't been anybody from the WWE on Hot 107.5.
And that's a station in your neck of the woods?
No, that's in New York. That's what I'm saying. New York, the biggest syndicated morning talk show on the planet.
You mean 105.1?
105.1, yeah. Power 105.1.
Yeah, you said 107. I didn't know what you
were saying. Oh, 90, sorry, because there's Hot 97 and then there's Power 105. Those are the two rival stations. And so you have people show up on, like, you have more folks show up on, like, Hot 97 and like that. Like, you see a lot of the WWE people, but that's because Peter Rosenberg, who is a host on Hot 97, he's got the connection because he works for the WWE, right? So he is able to funnel those people over to there. That was up until that point. You didn't see the WWE on any urban radio stations, anything like that. So it's like you can see who they want to promote to and who they don't want to promote to. Once they finally started to click. Oh, huh. So black and brown people actually watch this too. Interesting. Right. Maybe we should tap into those markets because they spend more on things than other races, than the major race tends to do, right? So it's like, but they know who they want to promote to when it comes to whether it's the UFC, the WWE, they both kind of have that issue.
Right. And again, I kind of want to shelve this now for the roundtable just because we're delving into the mix of cultures and skin colors and races. And you know me, and for those who don't know, I tend to always say there should only be one, the human race. But, you know, that's just me being on my positive soapbox here.
Right.
You know.
Because we'll talk colorism too. That's a whole.
Oh yeah, you and I have delved into that too. And we always do here on Podcast Jams. We kind of tend toward a little bit of the controversial, and I know you and I get a lot of feedback, and I'll say it like that, from people who may not see our point of views. They don't have to share our point of view, but they can at least see where we're coming from.
Right.
And I think that's when we do this roundtable that we're teasing with multiple people involved. And if you haven't checked out the first roundtable we did, go back in the kind of catalog about a month ago. Myself, Dio, Darnell, and Kat, who we all know each other from Twitter, who are avid wrestling fans and supporters, but we all come from different backgrounds.
Yep.
You know, myself and Dio are self-explanatory. We talk to you guys weekly. Darnell is a gay black man from New York City. You know, Kat is a positive fan of color who goes to all the wrestling shows down in Florida and is kind of the voice of reason when it comes to fandom, who kind of just goes off the deep end. But she's been known to headbutt assholes at shows who disrespect women.
Yep.
So I'm all about having those kinds of voices who are different from the gym bro that's behind the microphone.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say Joe Rogan, but you know exactly what I mean, Dio, when I say that. Before we get out of here, I do want to mention the passing of one Mean Gene Okerlund. The funny thing is I was watching Botchamania last night, and they showed the spot when he's interviewing Rick Rude at SummerSlam or Mania, one of the two. And, you know, the set falls behind him and he says, you know, F it, right. You know, and I remembered him more for his WCW hotline.
Yeah.
You know, was 909-9900.
Yep.
I believe was the phone number. And just knowing that Mean Gene went from being this interviewer in WWF and even long before I was born, you and I were born, for being the voice of just asking the questions that need asking.
right?
The quintessential 80s and 90s interviewer for backstage vignettes. And I, even now I'm thinking about when me and Gene interviewed Slick, and it was the birth of Akeem the African Dream.
Yeah.
And me and Gene is saying, this looks like suspiciously like the One Man Gang to me.
Right.
You know, and it was tongue in cheek, obviously, because, you know, and then all of a sudden Akeem comes out and he goes, well, still looks like the One Man Gang.
Yeah.
You know, and all those interviews with Hogan and Listen Here, Mean Gene.
Yep.
You know, Ric Flair and him had a couple of good back, you know, run-ins back to backs and such. I think for me personally, what I'll remember about Mean Gene is just the WWF, I guess, early days of my fandom.
Yep.
I was watching WrestleMania 3 the other day. It was quite interesting seeing him and Jimmy Hart be featured so prominently, you know, on these shows. And then that initial jump when all the WWF announcers and talent were jumping to WCW in the early to mid 90s.
Right.
Mean Gene and the Hotline and him interviewing, you know, being able to see him interview people like Ice Train, you know, yeah. and Marcus Alexander Bagwell, you know, just thinking, wow, really, Mean Gene? You went from interviewing Hogan to this, and then, you know, the kind of living off the name after that when he wasn't interviewing people regularly once WCW went out of business. I know he was in Legends House
right.
on the network. He does one-offs here and there, so he goes to conventions, you know, Mean Gene Okerlund or whatever. That is what I'll take from the memory of Mean Gene, who passed away today in his 70s. Still a little young for me. You know, my father is 83, 84 years old. So the joke with me and my dad is like, look, Dad, somebody else you outlived.
Yeah.
You know, so I guess we can add another one. And I'm not making fun of the death of Mean Gene, but just saying that's a thing that whenever I see someone that dies
younger
than what I anticipated them passing by, that's usually the thing that me and my father talk about. So before we go, what are your thoughts or memories of Mean Gene Okerlund? And where does he stand in the annals of professional wrestling for you?
He is the greatest of all time.
In terms of
interviewers, like the fact that he was consistent all the time.
That is a good word to describe him.
You don't like everybody has botches, right?
Yes.
But he had a very special talent that even when he messed up, he rebounded off of it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was right off the cuff. He was natural. Like he was just a natural talker, and it was consistent no matter when. He was always Mean Gene Okerlund, right? And that was it. Like he was just consistent. When he went, like you said, when he went from WWF to WCW. So he goes from, you know, Hogan and Savage and all of these larger than life to, you know, like you said, before he was even Buff Bagwell, Marcus Alexander Bagwell. And he's, you know, interviewing Surfer Sting and Brian Pillman, right? Mm-hmm. Like he was still consistent, and he gave a lot of these people a gravitas that they wouldn't have had otherwise, because he brought legitimacy to it, right? Like he brought a feeling that to this WCW, which was a smaller promotion at the time, that oh, they're legit. Like they have, you know, they've got the voice. This sounds like something big. This sounds like it is the A side show, you know, like he was always consistent, and he could go toe to toe with whomever on the microphone. It was never somebody ran over him. No, he could go back and forth and just work off of it. He knew when to end things. He knew when to amp it up. Like he just got it. And there is nobody else that was like that.
Well, I was going to ask you now briefly, what do you say to those who say Gordon Solie should be ahead of Mean Gene Okerlund? Because I liked Gordon Solie. I really did. But I see what you're saying about Mean Gene. Just, I think being able to connect different generations of wrestling fans is important. And I think that's why Mean Gene, I think, kind of supersedes the overall smoothness and delivery and the dulcet tones that Gordon Solie had.
Right.
Where we can talk about Gordon Solie and just strictly NWA, WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Mean Gene, we could talk about multiple promotions.
Multiple promotions and multiple decades.
Yes.
That's the thing. It's kind of like, it's kind of like the whole hip hop debate of who the greatest of all time is, and people are always going to say Notorious B.I.G. and Tupac. But the thing is, both of them have very well. I shouldn't say Tupac because his family released stuff after the fact. But I will never say that Big is the greatest of all time because we only had a very small sample size.
Right.
He had what, two albums? You know, he was really only active for about 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
He's got classic songs, and both those albums are classics. But when you look at timeline, like, look at the length of a career that like a Jay-Z has.
Yes.
You really can't compare the two because you only got to see, we got to see Gordon Solie for a certain amount of time, but we got to see Mean Gene in different, not only decades, but different eras and different eras of different companies, and how he has stayed as a pinnacle of those promotions to this day. Like it's, even in his later years, when he would come back and do things, he was still consistent, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like how you have, like, with the Jim Ross now, where it's like, bro, you got to hang it up. This ain't for you anymore.
Right.
Mean Gene stayed at the level that he was all the way to the end. So, like, that's why I was like, you really can't compare. And it's like, do you think that a Gordon Solie would be able to go back and forth with people the way that Mean Gene was for so long? I don't think he could, you know, because he was a character that was for a specific time. And that's probably the only time that he would have been able to exist is there.
And be that successful.
And be that successful. It's kind of like how I was listening to Steven Larson, their podcast a while back.
Yeah.
And they were talking about like how certain wrestlers are for a certain time, right? And they talked about Lex Luger. Lex Luger could only exist and be popular in the early 90s. That's it. Outside of that, him as a person, as a performer, as a character, it couldn't exist outside of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of how I see Gordon Solie. Like, he is good for a certain time, right? Like, you know how how you had to have the radio voice.
Yes.
Or, you know, like how you had like the Howard Cosells of the time that had a very specific way that they talked when they that was for a very specific time. But Mean Gene was able to craft himself and still flow as whether it was a different decade, a different era, a different promotion, or even a different medium. He was still Mean Gene the whole way through and was still at a high level. So that's why I say he's the greatest.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. Like, as I said before, him being able to bridge multiple gaps of wrestling years, you know, the generations, I should say, just part of my childhood, part of a lot of our childhoods, and went from WWF to WCW, back to WWE for the spot occasion. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget him. Him having to do that cringeworthy interview with the gobbledygooker at Survivor Series,
and he still killed it. It's times like that when he had it was cringeworthy because it was like, bro, y'all are making him
talk to a turkey,
but he still did his job at a high level.
Mm-hmm. And that is the mark of a true professional. And I'd say that is probably one of the more lasting images for me. For Mean Gene is the longevity as well as the professionalism. Again, this is probably before we all got to see the behind the curtain in terms of wrestlers and promoters and talent, you know, thinking that there are like these great people and these wonderful humans outside the ring or outside the realm of being filmed. You know, we didn't know that about Mean Gene Okerlund. All I know is that he was a smoker.
Right.
Like that's all I pretty much got. And a former co-host of mine mentioned something about having a couple of interactions with him that were kind of fun. But other than that, I didn't really hear much on Mean Gene and as a person outside the ring. And that's what I'm going to choose to recall because I don't know this. And obviously, as the days go forward, you know, there's going to be one or two people who on social media are going to probably dig up some stuff in Mean Gene's past. And
right.
You know, and that's where we are in society.
Yeah, where, there is no person that's not that's
untouchable.
That's untouchable. Like, there are very few people where you dig into their stuff and it's like, oh man, they're like, you have like two people that come to mind, and that's Nat King Cole and Mr. Rogers. Those are like the only two people that like people have tried to dig things up on, and it's literally impossible.
Yeah.
So,
and I think you should, those two definitely should leave alone.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers too. Like, come on, man.
Oh no, I'm fighting people if they say anything.
Don't mess with Fred Rogers, man.
Yeah.
I mean, stop it. So that's actually a pretty good segue before we go. Anyone you nominate for Stop It?
I wouldn't say any particular person in particular, mm-hmm. but just like, I want, it's 2019 where it's a whole new year. Like, I want folks to just enjoy the product. Like, I want people to try to just enjoy not just the product, but the performers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, if the whole thing of like going to shows with and trying to like film people botch, and like, you know, you're there with, you're not there to enjoy it, you're there to dissect it and to, you know, make content for yourself. Leave that in 2018, please. I know a lot of y'all run websites and blogs and want to gain followings on Twitter and such, but like, there's no reason for that. You know, like, if I'm there to, like, if there's a show and I'm like, you know what, I want to catch Nia Jax botch, what, who's that helping?
Right.
You know, you're not helping. You're absolutely not helping Nia Jax, but you are, only thing that you're helping is make the community become more toxic than it already is.
Right.
So that's my stop. It is just like, just go to enjoy stuff, you know? And even if you do have like, you're filming the match or whatever and somebody botches, like, if it's the, if your first thing you think of is, oh, I got to post this onto Twitter. I got to send this to Brian the Guppy. I got to send this to so and so and so and so. It's like, what type of clout chasing nonsense is that? What was the point? Why did you go to the, did you actually go because you like pro wrestling, or did you go because you want to make a name for yourself?
I just like the fact that you came up with the Brian the Guppy reference. That is so 2019 already.
Because yeah. what is it that you want to, what, why are you there? Because if you want to be part of the show, you know, there's plenty of pro wrestling schools that, you know, you can try.
You can be a wrestler.
You know, you can be a wrestler. If you want to do that, or if you want to become an announcer, you want to become an interviewer. Cool. You want to be, if you want to be that, a part of the show that badly, do it the right way. But if all you are doing is going to shows just to like shit on people.
Yeah. Yeah. Stop that. Yeah. Just enjoy the show, man.
Or at least try to enjoy the show.
Find something. You know, wrestling is so diverse.
Right.
Stop nitpicking every little thing. There are things we can be upset about in terms of outside the actual wrestling,
right,
outside the actual action. That's fine. But when you're there at a show, if someone botches, sometimes they're funny and they roll with it, you right. know. But again, like you said, unless your name's Hokai, you right. know what I mean, and you're jiffing it for a living, don't be that guy or gal.
Just right.
Stop it. But as always, find us on Twitter. Dio's at I'm Just DEO. Your boy Damon G at Damon G347. We'll see you hopefully later this week for the roundtable discussion. We're actually going to put this kind of into motion. I know we have a couple of target dates set up for later this week, so we're probably going to wind up doing a couple of shows per week, hopefully, in the next coming week, now that the New Year's over and I'm done stuffing my face with desserts. Mm-hmm. You know, we can actually have a show more often yep. than not. So we'll catch you hopefully later this week, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right.